This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold Golden and Gregory.
Welcome to Energy Matters, a show about how you can save money on your utility bills, use technology wisely, and live a more sustainable lifestyle. Here's your host, veteran energy regulator and clean energy expert, Commissioner Tim Echols.
Thank you, Scott Slade. I'm Tim Echols. Thanks for tuning in today. We're going to help you learn about sustainability, technology, and saving money on your energy bill. Saturday,
in the park, money, money, money.
My co-host today, as always, John Noel, former state representative and energy guru extraordinaire. How's it going, John?
Always a pleasure here, Tim, sir.
Yeah. You got any cool energy stuff you're working on at your house? I know you're always a Frankenstein over there doing things like batteries and solar and, yeah. and condensate water
trying not
collection.
To get zapped. That's yeah. right. None that occur to me, but I'm always working on something that I'm always interested in how much I can save water and how much water I can produce through all the things, whether it's downspouts or condensate off of air conditioners.
Yeah, water's becoming increasingly an important line item in folks' budget as it goes up in cities like Atlanta and Athens and other places. So it is becoming more of a precious commodity. In the studio with us today, Harriet Langford. How are you doing, Harriet?
I'm great, thank you.
It's really good to have you on the show today. Harriet's from down in LaGrange, Georgia. If you've ever been heading down toward Alabama on I-85, and we talk a lot about the Racy Anderson Highway, and Racy Anderson was your dad.
Yes, he was.
Wow. And he passed a couple years ago. Was it 5 years ago? How long ago has it been?
He passed away in 2011. And what was really special about Ray was the majority of his wealth went to a foundation to his only two daughters. What was interesting about Ray was he gave no directions or instructions as to what we would do with that money. But, you know, over the course of several years, we've really charted a good path and, you know, working on the Ray Highway and some initiatives at Georgia Tech and working with biomimicry. So I think the Racy Anderson Foundation has really set a platform for the whole state of Georgia and the nation.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Also over here is your hubby, Phil. Phil, how's it going?
Very well, Tim. Thank you for inviting us to the show today.
Yeah, and it's really great to be friends with your family, and you guys give us so much support on social media as well as you're out and about in the state, and just the kind words that you've said, you know, not only about me and the commission, but others in our state. You guys are such good partners, such good citizens. Thanks for being here, Phil.
Thank you for letting us be here with you today.
Yeah, and we're gonna chat and find out all about the Ray Day here in a moment. But Harriet, let's go back in the memory machine to your days as a basketball star, right? I mean, you walked on at West Georgia.
I did.
College in Carrollton, playing basketball. I mean, did you grow up playing basketball in high school? I guess you did.
Well, from what my father told me, he had to give me a ball, go outside, and play real long and hard to get all my energy out. So I started playing with the ball for early on and played for LaGrange Academy. I was the starting center there, which I'm not that tall, but I actually had that position as the center.
But feisty.
I was feisty for sure. So, I mean, I really had a love for basketball, and I decided I wanted to play, and I had not gotten any scholarship offers, so I walked on the basketball team for West Georgia. Coach Nancy Mosley was there. She had just left LaGrange High School, so I did know the coach there, and it was fun. It was great, but I knew I was never going to make a career out of it, so I started focusing more on getting through school. So I put the basketball down and graduated.
Yeah, so you were a psychology major, and I mean that had to be, you know, that had to be a little different going from the basketball court to the lab.
Very different.
Yeah.
My first job was nothing to do with psychology. I worked for a concrete company in LaGrange, Georgia, and I was there for several years until I started having a family.
Wow. John, you think about concrete and coal ash. I know you live over by Plant McDonough, but this coal ash that we have in Georgia is a little bit of it's going into every cement mixer, you know, that
so I've heard
that's out there, depending on what they're going to be using it for. Mm-hmm. But it is a good adhesive or binder in there. There's a chemical reaction that happens. Maybe one show we can talk more about that, but that's
file that away, hold it, taking notes now. So
cool reuse of that. Well, let's dive in. You know, John, you've been on the Ray a lot. You videoed. We put it on the Matters Radio Twitter feed, which is our show.
That's worth talking about a little bit. Yeah. I'd read about it. Hadn't met y'all. Didn't know you from Adam's House Cat. And I went down there just to see it myself. Drove the electric car down, plugged in under the solar canopy, rolled over the solar road. Then got my tires checked by this automated thing that just flashed a bunch of stuff. My car didn't even stop, and next thing you know, it told me my tire pressure on all four tires. Could not believe it. And all that stuff, that was 2 years ago, it seems like. I mean, who knows what innovations you've done.
Yeah, and this technology, you know, didn't come easy. I mean, Harriet and Phil and their board, they worked really hard, and there's a story behind every single piece of the technology, and we're going to unpack all that. So, you know, Harriet, I think first I just want to hear about this transformation that happened in your dad, right? So he had a carpet factory, right? They were making carpet squares and selling carpet squares. And he had this epiphany that, you know, he was doing things wrong. Tell us about that transformation in your dad.
Sure. So, you know, Ray started his carpet company in 1973, and it was business as usual. He grew it to be a global billion-dollar company, and West Coast customers began to question Ray in the mid-90s. So what are you doing for the environment? And he said, well, I comply by all the rules and laws. But what changed him was a book, The Ecology of Commerce, that was given to him by Paul Hawken, and he said he got to page 6, and it was the death of birth. And he realized he was a plunderer of the earth and all of its resources. He had been making carpet the same way for over 20 years, and it was the take, make, waste. You know, carpet tiles were landing in the landfill. And he knew that he could not keep doing what he was doing, and that he truly had that spear in the chest moment where he knew he had to completely transform his company. And together with Interface, over several years, they charted a path to become the most sustainable carpet tile company in the world. And that didn't come easy. But what Ray really was smart and proved the business case was that he saved over $450 million for his company just by recycling and reusing his carpet tiles. And he pledged not one more drop of oil. And so today, if you look at Interface, they're headed directly where they're supposed to be, and that is to be a carbon neutral company. And by the year 2020, there'll be zero waste anywhere.
Very impressive.
And that's impressive on a product like carpet. And so, you know, Ray really was a pioneer in sustainability. And of course, you all have taken, that money that he left to the foundation, and now you're multiplying it really with great ideas and projects, you know, that not only impact that 18 miles of highway, but it's really impacting highways all across America. And so it's really doing something that you probably never thought it would do.
Absolutely. You know, to take 18 miles of interstate, which is, you know, high speed environment, which is totally different than maybe an urban setting in Atlanta, this is a great opportunity for us to look at this 18 miles as a living laboratory. And our partners are Georgia Department of Transportation and Federal Highway. That was very critical in the very beginning for us to establish a great relationship and a working relationship where we could begin to bring technologies from around the world to actually be tested in this environment. So it's very different than just an urban setting. High-speed environment really makes a big difference.
There are some similarities between what y'all are doing. DOTs historically are the worst entities at dealing with. They're dinosaurs. They just pave roads. That's what they do. They fix bridges. Y'all are taking on a tough industry, and it's exactly what Ray did when he took on the carpet industry and manufacturing and said, wait, there's a whole new better way to do it. And people said, what are you, crazy? And then he did it. And this is a what are you crazy moment, and you guys are proving that it can be done in innovating. How are you supposed to innovate a highway? Y'all are figuring it out.
Yeah, they've been doing this a little bit at a time, John, and I really have liked the approach that they've taken. Mm. It hasn't been a demanding shake your fist, scream, yell, picket approach. It's hey, let us partner with you. Let's right. try this here. Let's try this over there.
That's right.
We'll fund this. You work with us here. And that kind of a partnership has really, I think, been well received.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
It's clear.
Yeah. So, as you think about some of the things that Ray did early on, with his vision, what were those very first baby steps that he made in terms of moving into this area of industrial sustainability?
Well, he really worked with the whole team at Interface and said, we've got to figure out how to reduce our waste. We got to look at renewable energy. We got to close the loop. And simple things like recycling water, reusing the backing, creating the top from discarded fishing nets. There were so many wonderful things
cool.
that he used to change really how carpet was made. So, he had to get everybody on board there to really look at a whole nother process of how to make carpet. And, reclaiming that carpet is what really has been the cost savings.
Well, let's keep this conversation going. John, when we come back, I want to talk about the Ray Day, which is always the third Sunday in October, and some of the cool things that you'll learn there. I'm Tim Echols. Stick around. Got more Energy Matters in just a moment.
The electric car revolution is coming, and the choices are growing. GEM cars are everywhere. You've seen these low-speed electric vehicles on college campuses, downtown Atlanta streets, and resort islands like St. Simons and Jekyll. GEM cars are street legal, equipped with seatbelts, headlights, and a tag, and can operate on roads with speed limits of 35 miles per hour or less. If you want to know more about these electric cars and trucks, six-passenger shuttles, mobile repair service, or full vehicle wraps, go to GEMCarService.com. That's GEMCarService.com.
John, one of our sponsors for the show, Rowe Insulating Company, is doing a great job in and around Athens, being able to do a lot of what we talk about every single week on the show.
Every time it gets cold, every time it gets hot, it's always that attic that's the problem. And you could attack windows, and that's going to cost you a cold fortune. It is insulation that can solve the problem.
Hey, if you want to get this fixed, call 706-795-2854. That's 706-795-2854. Rowe Insulating Company.
Rowe. Support for Energy Matters comes from Arnold, Golden, and Gregory. AGG takes a business sensibility approach when advising clients. AGG provides industry knowledge, attention to detail, transparency, and value to help businesses and individuals achieve their definition of success. AGG subscribes to the belief, not if, but how, and we appreciate their support of our little old Energy Matters.
That's right. Well, we've got Phil Langford, Harriet Langford. Yes, they are married. They're from LaGrange, and they are a part of the Ray C. Anderson Foundation and the Ray C. Anderson Highway Project. And, as we were chatting in the last segment about how this kind of came about, none of this stuff kind of happened accidentally. And, Phil, you were mentioning about Georgia Tech's involvement, and this is a show where we do talk a lot about the University of Georgia. We record this show in Athens, Georgia. But you guys leaned on Georgia Tech for help with the project. How did that go?
When we originally decided that we were going to pursue a sustainable highway, we went to the Google and looked it up, and there was nothing for a sustainable highway. So we had a relationship with Allie Kelly, now our executive director. She was with Georgia Conservancy at the time, and Harriet sat on the Conservancy board. So when we decided that we needed to make the road sustainable, we called Allie. And that's how we got involved with Allie and the Conservancy. Then we went to Georgia Tech. We had 9 graduate architectural students spend a year defining what a sustainable highway was. We had the help of Ryan Gravel with the Beltline that helped us, and so we had this great report. And when we got the report, we didn't really know what to do with it. So one of our board members, Alan Anderson, he was the past head engineer for Boeing.
For that Dreamliner, right?
For the Dreamliner. That was his last his last credit was the interiors and the wings of the Dreamliner. That was his baby. But he had a company in Cambridge, England, Anovia Tech, which is 45 PhDs. So we sent the report from the 9 architectural students from Georgia Tech to the 45 PhDs in Cambridge, England, and for them to give us a plan of action, of which they came back and said, wow, what an opportunity. What stranded assets you all have when you look at the highways, and what opportunities there are to go forward and look at the interstate system a little different.
When you say stranded asset, I mean, I understand it's just a road, but what's the other asset? Like, tell our listeners what you're talking about.
Well, your natural resources. You've got your sun, unlimited access other than a road, a car going over the road. You have solar.
Yeah.
You have water.
Yeah.
You have land. You have crop production that could be an alternative. Right now, our interstate system is such as looked upon as being getting from a point A to point B.
Yeah, just asphalt.
Asphalt or concrete. And the other thing is we don't look at the amount of maintenance that is incurred yearly on items that really aren't part of the road. We have the right-of-ways. You have such mass land that, if you think about it, there's
30... How much land is it?
I do not know. There's 250 acres.
Wow.
In our 18 miles.
So you're saying there's
about 35 million
stranded asset acres in 16 miles.
And all we're doing is when the road was built, we grassed it, and now all we do is we maintain cutting the grass, okay, and there's no benefit from it. So there's your natural resources, crop production. There's myriads of ways that we feel like the road system should
completely be completely underutilized.
Should be providing the cost. It should be self-providing.
So you came back with this report, you know, from the tech guys and the Georgia Tech, Cambridge folks, and Harry, what did y'all do with that document, with that data, information, the recommendations? How did you move forward with that?
What was great was that we actually could start focusing on what technologies were out there, what could we address as soon as possible, knowing that not everything is viable or ready yet. But we really realized that because of the massive amount of land, the first thing we thought about was solar, and we thought that would be a critical point for GDOT down the future because, you know, gas tax will eventually go away, and we thought this would be a great opportunity for them to start thinking as solar, it may be interchanges that could be a lease agreement on that land, and that would take that burden away from GDOT in their responsibilities.
So in 2016, John, during the Integrated Resource Plan, I came with a motion to essentially create a 1 megawatt solar array somewhere on the Ray. It's going to be at exit 14 now, that would be built by Georgia Power, power used by Georgia Power, but on the Ray with, and we added pollinator flowers in between each row so that it's attractive.
And weeds don't grow up and cover the things.
Yeah, that's right. So it enhances kind of the ag feel of the area. I mean, LaGrange and Troup County and all of this area in that western part of Georgia, Harriet, is still very agricultural, isn't it?
It sure is. There's a lot of farmland there, but what we thought would be really smart was that what farmland has become fallow or they're not using it anymore, you usually do see solar, you know, begin to start emerging. And, you know, South Georgia, we see that happening now. But this is only the third solar array on an interstate
In the country.
So we're really excited to say that, you know, we took a risk. We worked with PSC, Georgia Power, and that we were awarded this megawatt of solar And we want to see this continue. We hope that this happens in other places because it's just an economic opportunity.
Yeah, John, last year, that third Sunday in October, you and me and Harriet and Clark Howard and a whole number of folks gathered downtown Atlanta.
And with the Leaning Tower of Power.
And with the police escort, we headed down to the Ray Day. And you guys are going to have that again this year and every year, right? Third Sunday in October?
Correct.
Yeah.
This will be our 7th annual Ray Day event at Serenby. What's going to happen is we're going to start with an EV rally caravan at Georgia Power headquarters, 241 Ralph McGill Boulevard. So if you've got an EV car or a plug-in hybrid, we invite everybody to come and gather there. We'll head down the interstate 34 miles to the beautiful community of Serenby, where we host our annual Ray Day event.
Yeah, so let's talk about Ray Day. John, you and I went there, walked around, a lot of exhibitors, but that it's a giant circus tent. You guys have to have spent, I mean, $50,000, $100,000
on what? Easily.
Oh, I bet more than that.
Really?
It's a little more than that, but this is our gift to our community. Yeah. So, this is really to help really inspire and educate people in sustainability and make it more of a comfortable subject.
How many folks come to Ray Day?
Last year we had over 2,200, and we are hoping that we have even more this year. They're around 75 environmental education booths that are available for people to go and visit around the big tent where we host this in the field. And there's family fun festival. We have hot air balloons 1 year. That didn't work so well due to the weather. So we've moved on to more grounded things like Ferris wheel, and we have rock climbing walls, and lots of things for kids with face painting. There's an animal area. Kids can go and visit the different farm animals. So it really accommodates the whole family. So you've got the educational booths to walk around and visit. And these are booths from around the whole country. They're all working in sustainability. And it's great to come together. It kind of inspires everybody to keep moving, you know, continue on with your mission. And we love it because this is free, and we think it's a wonderful opportunity. We feed you, and we provide drinks for you, so there'll be food trucks there. We actually have some adult beverages, so be sure to have a DD driver or somebody else to get you back. But this is, you know, a one-day crash course in sustainability, but lots and lots of fun activities.
Confession, we still use our Ray Day bag and some of those little Ray Day plastic cups that have been given out years ago. They're getting worn, so I'm glad that that new Ray Days are always upcoming.
Always.
So we're in the debate now as to what the freebies will be this year.
Hey, I'm all ears.
Yeah. So, hey, I need to have a table. We need to have a Public Service Commission table down
there. You are
there.
Welcome to have one. We'd love for you to.
We'll have to put you on the waiting list, ma'am.
Let's plan on...
Shameless plug.
I think I got some pull. I get you in.
Well, Serenby. Why Serenby? And what, you know, what's significant about Serenby?
Well, Steve Nygren, who is the founder of Serenby, he grew up in Atlanta, and he was in restaurant business, but he looked at his family and said, I'm exhausted with this urban sprawl. Can we go out in the country and just start over again? So he located the property, which is in Palmetto, Georgia. I think he accumulated up to 1,300 acres right off the bat and literally moved his three daughters and wife into a small farmhouse. And he got there and he realized, you know, this is a gem. This is a huge opportunity, but I don't really know what to do with it. And Ray Anderson immediately said, you know, I can help you. We can pull the brightest minds in sustainable building and development. And so Ray really was instrumental in getting Serenby started and helping Steve Nygren figure it out. And if you look at you know, Serenbe's just really growing. A lot of people, you know, that work at the airport live there, so it's a great location.
Well, John, when we come back, I want to talk more about Ray Day and opportunities folks have to for sustainability education and some of the cool things that's going on, especially this EV caravan. I'm Tim Eccles. My co-host is John Knoll. John, you're at
New Energy Guy.
New Energy Guy on Twitter. I'm at Tim Eccles. Stick around, and we'll be right back to talk more about the Ray Day.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Creative Solar USA is a Georgia-based turnkey installer of innovative solar panel systems. They're dedicated to energy solutions for both your home and business. With their NABCEP certified installers, they ensure their clients receive the highest quality of solar energy systems in the industry. Contact CSUSA today at 770-485-7438 or go to creativesolarusa.com.
This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Energy and Environment.
This half hour of Energy Matters is sponsored by Energy and Environment. Energy and Environment's commercial, industrial, and government efficiency contracting services lowers utility bills, and that's something we talk about a lot on Energy Matters, for their customers. They specialize in custom lighting, retrofit solutions, and Energy and Environment brings over 20 years of experience to your place of work. So see what they can do for you at energyandenvironment.com. All right, well, John, we've got in studio today Harriet Langford and her husband Phil Langford, and they're part of the board for the Racy Anderson Foundation and the Racy Anderson Highway Project that both you and I have been on, and we talk a lot about here. Allie Kelly's been a frequent guest.
Yeah, I'm a total groupie on this thing, so I'm just sitting over here just kind of patting, you know, saying, oh, what's next? Tell me what's next on the race. And hey, y'all were just telling us something about rubber roads. What?
Yes, we'll be in the midst right now of paving the Ray, so we're going to get a test site of 10% asphalt rubber, which is really exciting. We'll get a mile of that, and it also will go into the Welcome Center. Why do we care about that? Because we know that there's just discarded tires. They never biodegrade. They're a detriment to the environment, so why wouldn't we want to put them in roads? Because it gives the road longer longevity. It helps with rain runoff and spray, and it's much quieter.
So is this going to feel a little bit like a rubberized track at a school, you know, like when my daughter ran track in college, and, you know, it's a little softer? Is the asphalt going to have that feel to it? Will it kind of absorb, or will it still be, you know, undetectable from the surface?
I can tell you that I have ridden on a rubber road, and it's much, much quieter. It does feel different. It's much smoother, and I think the fact that, you know, it's going to be a quieter road, this is great if it's urban or ex-urban, that we just need to get more rubber in roads. I think it's really critical. Other states are doing this now, so this isn't, you know, just the first state to attempt it. But the fact that the Ray actually will have something that can be demonstrated and show the difference, I think that's really important.
We've talked on this show before about tire pyrolysis, because Cox Conserves, which is the sustainability arm of Cox Enterprises, uses a tire pyrolysis facility down in Nahunna, Georgia, in Brantley County, to essentially reduce tire shreds to their original compounds. But this is actually taking chipped up tiny fibers of tire and actually mixing it in with the asphalt.
Correct.
Yeah. And then you would lay that down on a highway. And how about the durability of this? Does it last about the same as an asphalt road, or is it a little better or a little less?
Oh, it lasts a little longer, which is great. That's just less paving. I think the lifespan might be double. what you get with a regular asphalt.
And price? I mean, price similar?
Just a little bit.
All right, so let's just...
A little bit
more expensive.
So let's do some quick math. All right, I got my thing down here. Let's just say it's 10% more, and then you're going to double the life.
Okay, hold on.
We need to mark that up. I need to get in the rubber tire. But so if I made that 1.5 times more costly, and I still gave you a double life, it would still be a good deal.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so the reason...
DOT, are you listening?
John, the reason this is important is because these, you know, pilot projects help you see if things are actually doing what they're supposed to be doing, right? So by DOT paving a mile of this, as you know, as you come from Alabama into Georgia on 85, you'll be on the specialized pavement. And then as you go into that rest stop, which is in West Point, Georgia, where a lot of the other technologies are, then you're going to have that all around that you'll be driving on there as well. And that should give them an ability to test the performance of the product to see, okay, hey, this is a good deal. This is not only better, but it's a good deal. And so, you know, I know that's the theory, and hopefully we're going to see that work out. But I think what's incredible here, John, is the influence that Harriet and Phil and their board, the relationships that they've developed with DOT, so that DOT's willing to try this.
Absolutely.
You know, based on this recommendation, it's really quite amazing that you guys have been able to get them to do the things that they're doing down there.
We're thrilled. They listen to us, and we, you know, are very grateful for our partnership. But for us to put new ideas out there and that they're willing to try, I think that speaks a lot for our
department. When do we get more solar roads? That little section of solar.
Oh, boy.
It, again, folks, when you roll into this welcome station right there at the Georgia-Alabama line, you roll over a solar panel road. It's amazing. It looks like a road, and it's solar panels.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, Harriet and I and Allie and Alan Anderson, we were all overseas for a series of meetings with businesses, and we did have a chance to ride on...
Not a boondoggle, not a typical PSC boondoggle?
No, it wasn't paid for at all by the state of Georgia.
Okay, all right.
So no state money expended. Okay. But we were over there and had a chance to ride on about a mile of this stuff. I don't know, John. It was loud beyond my toleration.
Interesting.
I feel like the solar roadway is great for a low-speed path, a trail, the right-of-way, you know, but until that noise can be taken out of it, I just feel like
it also might be slick on rainy times.
No, it's not slick because they use a special adhesive on the top of it. It's really quite, quite firm. So that's not the issue. I mean, Harriet, what do you think? I mean, part of what y'all are doing is to see if ideas are ready for prime time.
Right.
Did you feel like the technology as it was doable for a road at a 70-mile-an-hour speed limit?
I will say this, it was a little loud, and what they figured out, it was the connecting of the solar panels, the grooves.
Mm-hmm.
They've come a long way. They've done some really modifying of these roads, and the efficiency is even better. We will be replacing our version 1 wattway with the version 3 wattway, and it will have higher efficiency. It won't be as noisy. Where I see the most value for these solar roads are probably the shoulders of the road.
Yes.
And if you think about that, that's just sitting there.
Yeah.
It's not very well used anyway, unless you're in distress. But if you did run off, there would be a little bit of a noise, not a rumble, but a bump. So that in itself, I think, would be great.
Yeah.
And the efficiency moving from version 1 to 3, it will be double what it does now. These solar panels go on top of the road surface. They're glued to the road surface. There's a skid-resistant glass overlay, which helps protect these solar cells. And we were, pleased with the version 1, but because we know efficiency continues to improve, we're really, really excited to do our version 3, and it will be a little bit smaller but more efficient.
When you tear those up, I do have space in my back area of, like, my driveway that we could, donation. Repurposing, obviously. That's just what I'm after.
Yeah.
Your point there is wonderful, because where we see wattway could literally be in driveways. Our 50-square-meter test pilot could power one home a year. So if you could see that in the future, literally your driveway could be your energy.
Holy cashmolas, I hadn't thought of that.
John, that wheelwright technology in the back of that rest stop,
Right.
Where you drive over it.
Again,
it,
you can see the video on Energy Matters.
Yeah, on our Twitter feed at Matters Radio. When you drive over it, the kiosk gives you your tire pressure and your tread depth.
Right.
And from a safety standpoint, Harriet, I've shown this to Lyft and some others who are renting vehicles, and I really think that it just makes a safety check so easy. You know, have you had a lot of interest in the wheel ride? Have you had folks ask, "Hey, where can we get this? How can we use it?" I mean, that's a great technology.
To me, it's probably the most valuable technology that we've installed, in the fact that it works on 18 wheels or 4 wheels. So this technology, literally, you never leave your car, and you drive over some sensors and cameras, and in less than 3 seconds, you get an outstanding reading of everything about your tires. And we also provide air for the front at the visitor center free of charge. So we waste over 2 billion gallons of gas a year on underinflated or improperly inflated tires. So if we can, you know, reduce that carbon coming out of the tailpipe, that's our goal.
You know, if you're just joining us, we're talking to Harriet Langford, Phil Langford of the Racing Anderson Foundation. They've got the Ray Day coming up, the third Sunday in October. And I'll be there, John. You'll be there.
Yeah.
We'll be in the EV caravan. It looks like I'm going to have a table there now, so you'll be able to see me under the big tent.
Too much.
Harriet, this is free, right, for folks?
This event is free for everyone.
Including the food. The beverages,
the trucks,
everything is free.
Beverages,
great family outing.
Yeah, this is a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
It's at Serenbe, which is just down 85 in Palmetto, Georgia. So it is a great opportunity, and so we want to make sure our listeners are hearing about this and that they enjoy a great fall day.
Google Ray Day and the Racy Anderson Foundation.
Yeah,
It is for kids.
Yeah.
I mean, it is heavily influenced for kids, so you can bring your little biscuit grabbers and let them run around in the fields for 3 hours.
It is something I think that families would really enjoy. In this final minute, I want to transition and talk a minute about water. And I know you guys own the Ray, that y'all have discussed water runoff, water preservation. Mm-hmm. What do you see happening there just in our last 30 seconds?
We tend to want to call that our nature tech. What we've done on the Ray is plant miles and miles of wildflowers. Now, why do we care about wildflowers? They are wonderful pollution grabbers. They help with erosion control, and there's bee and butterfly habitat right there.
And the roads are pretty.
And they're beautiful. And we also have a Kernza wheat plot, which is from the Land Institute, that grows 10-foot root systems. These are perennial wheat, so we would love to see more of this on highways that actually control water and erosion.
I'd love it.
And we're reducing the maintenance. We're not having to cut the grass.
Yeah, and that's good. What's the website for the Ray?
www.theray.org. That's to sign up for the EV caravan. And the 7th annual Ray Day is the RacyAndersonFoundation.org. You can go to our website, and all free, we invite you all to come.
I'm Tim Eccles. You're listening to Energy Matters, and we'll look forward to seeing you at the Ray Day. Tim Eccles here for Solar Sun World. No doubt you've seen solar panels popping up all over Georgia. If you want the precision of German engineering when it comes to solar, Solar Sun World is for you. The folks there understand the complexities of solar and how to make it work, from tax credits to inverters to accelerated depreciation. They'll unpack it all. They've been in business for over 25 years. To find out more, go to solarsunworld.com. That's solarsunworld.com. Hey, it's Commissioner Tim Eccles, host of Energy Matters. I want to tell you about Kevin Rowe and Rowe Insulating Company. If you need insulation anywhere within 60 miles of Athens, Georgia, you need to call 706-795-2854. It's important, isn't it, John?
It is the most important thing you can do in your house.
It's the low-hanging fruit of everything that we talk about on Energy Matters every single week.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, call 706-795-2854. That's 706-795-2854. Rowe Insulating Company.
Get comfortable.
Energy Matters would like to thank Gas South for its support of the show. Gas South has a no-deposit policy and offers some of the lowest per-therm rates in the state. Use the promo code MATTERS for a special deal. Gas South, the difference is good.
I'm John Noel. Welcome to Energy Matters.
again. And this time we are talking water in Georgia, more specifically, water in Athens, because we are joined today by Andrew Saunders, Sustainability Officer for Athens-Clarke County. I'm looking for your badge. Do you have a badge?
I left my badge at home.
You
today.
Left your badge yeah. at home. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm sure the badge comes out maybe when you get pulled over. Hard to see. Hey, what kind of officer are you? I'm a sustainability officer. All right, Big God, Andrew, I just love talking to you. Water is one of those things that we all use. We're 90-something% water. Don't ask my science instructor what that I didn't know that number. But what? We're all, water is everything. It is life. We know this. And yet, I don't think we use water wisely. I don't think we conserve water correctly. I think water's too expensive. I got a bunch of questions for you.
Let's
all right, I'm going to jump into it. You ready?
Let's do it.
Okay, I'm on this now. Okay. How do we use water? How do we use water?
So, you know, I'm like an energy guy first and foremost.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I live and sleep energy.
Mm.
But water is what's the one that keeps me up at night.
Really?
So if you think about how communities function, we can actually go without energy for a few weeks if we had to. It wouldn't be real pleasant,
yep.
but we could survive it.
Candles, the sun comes out.
As you can imagine, though, water is a fundamental part of health, wellness, quality of life, and our economy. So in communities, it primarily breaks down between residential use, what you're going to use in your home for eating, bathing, showering, watering your
yard.
Is that
half the usage that you have coming out of your system?
I wish I had those numbers for you, but it's substantial.
Okay.
It really is.
That's
and then the other breakdown is commercial. And so commercial can be very widespread. The kind of anecdotal story I like is we use about 20% of the water per capita that Gainesville, Georgia does. Well, why is that? Well, Gainesville, Georgia is the chicken processing capital of the world.
Right.
They have all of those meat processing plants, and that's a water-intensive
application. I've actually been through one about 15 years ago, and it was the most amazing, mystifying, nasty. It was unbelievable. It was and it was highly water-intensive and hot water-intensive.
I mean, interestingly enough, we've actually done forecasts of like what happens if we had mandatory conservation measures come down from the state on water.
Yes.
And in Athens, we're talking about millions upon millions of dollars of gross regional product that is disrupted and lost.
Right.
It's about a 25% throttle back on our economic output if we have mandatory water conservation measures applied.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. And in Gainesville, it'd be massive. I mean, first off, there'd be no chicken wings anymore at the chicken hut.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be a problem. All right. So what do we do to conserve? I mean, now you said there's a huge residential component. How are we going to conserve water?
So we're always going to start with education. I believe an educated consumer will generally make the right decisions. So one thing that we've been doing and a lot of communities are doing is immediate access to billing data. So in Athens, you can go online.
I just get my bill once a month.
You can sign up. They'll text you if there's a leak. We now can tell if you're drawing like a gallon per hour at night.
I got an electronic meter in Atlanta. Why don't I? I should have this.
Talk to your water utility.
We should have this.
So we're just rolling it out, but I'm already geeking out on this data so hard, and we're finding lots of opportunities.
Well, as
to save
you
water.
Well know, because you've been a frequent guest on the show, you see me checking my phone all the time to see what the solar, you know, production is as the sun's coming up in the morning or not.
Yeah.
I'm always going, oh, well, nice production day. But now you're telling me I could potentially do somewhat similar things with my water consumption at my home.
That is correct.
Okay, and that's insanely cool.
But also education like how to make water-resilient landscapes and how to make use of stormwater for landscaping purposes. Your standard, you know, Bermuda grass yard is water intensive, but it's not even as water intensive as we make it out to be. So I've owned multiple homes. I've never irrigated my grass. Do I get weeds? You bet.
Yes.
I'm not putting on putting greens either. It's grass. It's in my yard. It does its job.
What percentage of people do wells? Is that really just for the rich?
I think in Georgia, what you'd actually find is a lot of rural communities do wells where they don't have public water systems. We have seen some places where water is priced so aggressively that the alternative is to put in a private well, and it's onesies and twosies. It's not a lot of people because a well is $10,000, $15,000, $20,000.
Full disclosure, I grew up on well water. It wasn't a rich thing. It was about, like, we're on a farm.
That's right.
That was the only water source, and we had a septic tank, of course, for sewage, and that was typical. But that was typical around the United States until the modernity, where we decided, oh well, we're going to have a proper streets, proper roads, proper all this other stuff.
So, beyond education, though, we can look at better buildings. So Georgia actually is a leader in its water code. Because we went through such a severe drought, we require WaterSense certified equipment in most homes. And so you're using substantially less water to run the tap, take the shower, flush the toilet.
So the tap, often people talk about things called aerators.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm familiar with what this is. Tell our listeners what an aerator is and why you'd want to put that on the bottom of your
thing. So if you think about the way a tap works without an aerator, is basically like when you turn on your hose, you get a steady stream of high volume, overwhelming amounts
great
of
example,
water.
Great example, hose. Yeah.
So and what an aerator does is it breaks those water droplets down, which thereby puts air into the system. So you get
aerates it.
That's right. You still a very consistent flow, but it's not the same volume per second. So you make more efficient use of that water.
I like it. All right, and so what I've heard is that this could cut down. You have aerators that you just choose. How much do you want to go? What's your flow rate? You want it to be a gallon a minute. You want it to be half a gallon a minute. You want it to be a third of a gallon a minute, whatever you want. The one place you might want to be cautious about using aerators, I've noticed, is in the kitchen. In the kitchen sink, where you're like, I got to fill up this pot. Well, if you got an aerator in there, then you don't have the as we call it on the farm, or as we call it in the South, a hose pipe.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have a hose pipe type water in there, you've got this daggum aerator, in which case it just slows down. But everything else should be aerated, including shower heads.
Yeah.
And I would argue shower heads, aerating shower heads, is even more valuable because it's not just cold water and water that you're cutting back on. It's also hot water.
Yeah.
So now you're saving water, yes, but you're also saving the hot water that costs a ton of money to heat, whether by natural gas or electric.
That's correct. And, you know, low-flow shower heads have a notoriously bad reputation.
Oh, everybody hates the low-flow shower head. And then your bill will like it, well, and the environment likes
but,
it.
But let's pause for a minute. Andrew, the sustainability guy, when I go to a hotel and I turn on the shower and I'm like under this mist, it genuinely pisses me off,
and,
right?
You know, since you have a larger frame, this could take a long
time. I've got
time.
Like six hairs and I still am frustrated.
Not talking about hairs. But hey, that works for both of us here. We have limited hair. It's about body size, you know. I might take a shower faster, but I'm just saying.
But what I would point out is that not all shower heads are created equal. So you've had that experience,
yes.
But don't let that set the bar.
That's true.
Go look on Amazon or talk to your local hardware store. I've got a low-flow shower head that would about take the skin off of you if you're not careful, and yet it's still using less than a gallon a minute.
All right.
So
all right.
It's just good engineering.
It's good engineering. So it's about good engineering. Now, but part of the problem is affordability.
Yeah.
So some of these gizmos cost money, and water costs money. So first off, let's go to water pricing and then affordability of that pricing. So how does that work here?
So I'm an advocate that the more water you use, the more expensive it should become. And what we do in our community is we set a winter baseline.
So you're talking about you're talking about pricing based on usage.
Yeah, so we have tiers. And
so it's not cheaper by the dozen, it's more expensive by the dozen.
That's exactly right. But in Athens, the base cost, it's about $5 for 100 gallons. So
$5
if you think
gallons,
about if you offered me one of those Home Depot pails and asked me if I'd towed it to the river 20 times for $5, absolutely not.
Right,
so
I'll pay.
There's a lot of bang for the buck in that $5.
Wow.
But what we've done is in the summer, if you're using more predominantly for irrigation and other outdoor purposes, it's going to cost you more.
Yes.
And to me, that's just a basic economic principle.
Is it seasonal too, or is it just volume based?
It's seasonal too.
Okay.
And we actually price all of our irrigation water.
So you're
going to
hit me harder
level
in the summertime than you would the wintertime because, as we say, that river might go
but
dry.
But we're going to hit you more compared to how you used it in the winter. Right? So you're not going to pay any more for the amount of water you used in the winter for that same amount of water in the summer. It's just what you use beyond that.
Okay.
And it has been incredibly effective at reducing our water use.
Have you seen an increase? I love talking about this for electricity. So as the GDP or the economy in Georgia goes up, electricity consumption is flatlined.
Ours is,
what happens with the economy going up, bills is going up, now what is water doing? Is it flatlining because of conservation, or is it increasing?
So our highest peak was 2008 before the drought, 2009.
Okay.
And then we had two things that happened. We had an economic downturn, and we had a major drought.
Yeah.
What we've actually seen is that water stayed pretty flat. It's ticked up a little bit lately, but it's not anywhere close to 2009 measures. We're still several million gallons a day below what that was.
Really?
But when we talk about pricing as a measure, what we've got to keep in mind is that you and I can afford a $50, $70, $100 water bill. Some people can't.
Right.
And so when you do that, you got, and then even if they could conserve water, sometimes there's an upfront investment. You got to be able to buy that toilet or fix that leak.
Right.
And so there's a couple of things that we see communities across the United States doing. One is just helping with billing assistance. But the other one that we're kind of geeking out on is Plumbers for the People. It's fixing these leaks proactively because it conserves a precious resource.
Fixing the leaks. So going out to somebody who otherwise couldn't afford to and fixing a leak, because a leak could be devastating.
We have a grant-funded initiative in Athens. We found somebody that had a leak. 270,000 gallons a year saved because we fixed a $1,000 pipe. Yep.
Wow, it's great. Well, I'm so glad we got a chance to talk about water. I mean, this is what Energy Matters does. We want to talk about new technologies. We want to talk about sustainability. We want to talk with thought leaders in the field like Andrew Saunders here from Athens. I'm John Noel at New Energy Guy on Twitter, and you are listening to Energy Matters and today on water. Thanks for listening.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Everyone has tough times in their life. By checking the Project Share box at the bottom of your utility bill, you can make life a little easier for your neighbors. Your $1, $2, or $5 checkoff is matched by the utility and then used by the Salvation Army to help folks having a tough time paying their energy bills. It's that easy. Join PSC Commissioner Tim Eccles and many others by donating via your power bills this year. See more by clicking ProjectShareInfo.com. And thank you.